2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green. Today is the 17th of August, and this is Game On with me, Marie Crow, and Ruby Walsh.
On Sunday, Offaly's 23-year wait for an All-Ireland of any sort came to an end when their under-20s were victorious at Croke Park. Their manager, Declan Kelly, will join us a little later to discuss that success and the progression of his players.
And they weren't the only ones who were successful last weekend. CJ Fulton and his dad, Adrian, will join us to discuss Irish basketball's impressive win in Europe.
Des Curran and Fergal Brennan will join us shortly on the line to discuss all things European soccer, from Barcelona's €1.1 billion debt to who can afford Cristiano Ronaldo.
And Gary Murphy has all your golf.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie may answer you. I most certainly won't be answering your tweets, but she might. She's into social media. Aren't you, Marie?
I actually am, and you're not, and we've discussed that many times, and it's probably something that will never change. Although Roy Keane was a person who I thought would never get into social media. I just felt it was against everything he stood for. And now he's posting Instagram posts from all around the place.
He's on Insta. There was a massive article actually in the Racing Post on Sunday about social media abuse and jockeys, and it was younger jockeys speaking about different things and the abuse they get and what's been said and what's not been said. And I suppose there was nothing overly surprising that I was reading, but it is still quite shocking when you read what some people say to others. It is quite grotesque.
It really is. Well, let us move on to football, a place that is very familiar with the social media abuse. And we're going to start with Harry Kane, because he did turn up to training. I'd say if he does go to Manchester City, he will be getting a lot of abuse, both online and in the stands. But he was training for Spurs today. Fergal Brennan is with us. Fergal, I did laugh at some of the social media comments all right today when I saw pictures of him turning up to first team training with the caption, "Man goes to work."
Yeah, that's the kind of strangest angle on all of this, that Harry Kane is a professional footballer. He's contracted to Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, and he is, as it stands, just doing the basics of his job, which is returning to pre-season training. Obviously, there's been the nonsense in the last 2 weeks or so where he's come out and said that he wasn't on strike, he didn't refuse to train, that it was a delay in his COVID quarantine when he returned to the UK from his holiday this summer. But I think we're all in a position to read through the lines. We know full well that there is a bit of a standoff going on between him and the club and Daniel Levy, the chairman. Nuno Santo is kind of finding himself in the crossfire of all of this. Even though they beat Man City at the weekend, Santo's press conference was dominated again by questions about Kane. What is the latest? Is there any movement on it? And kind of day by day, there isn't a great deal of change. Tottenham's situation and position on Kane remains the same. They've essentially set forward their asking price and the terms that they will be willing to negotiate a deal on. Man City are still not quite there. And as we know, as cliched as it sounds, Daniel Levy and Tottenham, when they set a price, when they set a structure, they don't tend to move away from it. So in terms of changes, there hasn't been a great amount. And yeah, kind of a little bit like the rest of us, getting back into a little bit more of a normal working schedule. It's nice to see that Harry Kane isn't so different after all.
No, but the other side of the coin is, Fergal, he did sign the contract. He knew what he was signing himself into. So why doesn't he just go and train, fulfil his obligation?
Yeah, and that's Spurs' point, and I think if you speak to a lot of Spurs fans, that's exactly what they would say. He agreed to this long-term contract where he's, I think it's 2024, he's committed to. And I think he will. I think he will until a deal comes to fruition. If it does, if it doesn't, I think that will be the case. And Kane does have a bit of a reputation in terms of wherever he is, whatever he's doing, he does commit to it. And I don't think it's completely unreasonable that he actually stays. If City say that they don't want to splash this much money, Tottenham don't move, that he'll stay. And I think you will see the old Harry Kane come back, and he'll be as consistent as he was, because he's quite capable of just clicking back into reset mode. But no, you're completely right. He took the contract, he signed the contract, he's the highest earner at Tottenham Hotspur Football Club as well at the moment. So I agree, there shouldn't be this, you know, kind of glad handing that he's coming back and he's fulfilling his contract. He's doing the absolute basic of what's required of him. And I think Tottenham will fully hold him to it, unless that huge fee comes in, which, as it stands, there's no great movement on that.
We are on Republic of Ireland Player Watch as well for the last while. Des Curran is with me in studio. Des, a bit of news today. Breaking news, Daniel MacDonald from The Indo is reporting that James McLean has severed his ties with Stoke and is going to rejoin his former club, Wigan Athletic. I think everybody just wants to see as many Ireland players as possible playing as much football as possible heading into these World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, all right. And I guess from James's point of view, you get to a point in your career, I suppose, where you want to feel comfortable again, and maybe going back to Wigan is somewhere where he feels he can do a job and feel comfortable again. But you're right, I mean, we're August, and the qualifiers aren't too far away. Everyone wants to get in Stephen Kenny's eye, and you know, you want to be playing regular. I saw, you know, talk about Gavin Bazunu again as well recently. You know, you have to be playing regularly in terms of competition for places. And certainly I think with this being the next qualifying system that Ireland are going through for James McLean, he'll see the younger players coming through that Stephen Kenny maybe had an under 20, under 21 level, and he'll know, you know, he's got to be playing, and he's got to be playing well to get in a spot as well. So it's an interesting move for him. All right,
Fergal, moving further afield to La Liga and Barcelona, I suppose, and Juan Laporta has claimed that Barcelona are 1.1 billion euros in debt, or pounds sterling actually is written in front of me, and by selling Lionel Messi, that only brings down their expenditure by 7% of their revenue. I mean, what sort of a business model have they got?
I mean, it is absolutely crazy, and Laporte has the perfect excuse where he can say that he's the new man on the job, and he's kind of put a lot of blame on the previous president, Josep Bartomeu, because he essentially oversaw this racking up of huge amounts of wages, huge amounts of just club expenditure and money just being hemorrhaged out of the club. I was reading something yesterday which said that a team of two or three scouts in South America were being paid €8 million a year just to keep an eye on players that could potentially be of interest to Barcelona Football Club in South America. So, yeah, it is absolutely enormous. And obviously, the books have only really been opened for the public to have a look at on the back of the story with Messi leaving. And Laporte has been relatively straight about the situation. He said that most clubs, even in the higher end of La Liga or European football, between 70 and 75% of their revenue is the max that they could go to for what they're spending on wages. Even if Messi had stayed, as you say, that would have only just come down under 100 to about 95%. So it shows the mess that they're in. And when you look through the Barcelona squad, there's so many players that are not in the first 11, not guaranteed starters, not even necessarily playing an enormous amount of football spread across the season. They're on huge wages. I think I read this morning there's 19 players on in excess of €80,000 a week. That shows you that the type of situation that we're dealing with. Obviously, we've seen with Grealish going to City and potentially Kane moving on, there's a huge amount of money moving around in football. But Barcelona is an example of lots and lots of players that are not necessarily kicking a ball, but are being paid a huge amount. And now we're in a situation whereby Barcelona are essentially telling players they can leave for free, or they can leave for a nominal fee just to get those wages off the budget, and they don't want to go because they will have to take a wage cut to move to a new team, and they know they're in a very strong, a very comfortable financial position at Barcelona. So they're essentially stuck between a rock and a hard place. They need to get players off the books before the transfer window closes, but it's very difficult to shift players on a huge wage to take a 20, 30% wage cut, even if that means their careers get revived a bit. So it's a mess, and they've got 2 weeks to solve it to an extent, and the signs don't look good as it stands.
Even if the finances are messed up in La Liga, it was business as usual, with Barcelona beating Real Sociedad 4-2, and Real Madrid kicked off life under Carlo Ancelotti with a 4-1 win against Alves.
Yeah, back to business. And I think for Koeman and for Ancelotti, that's what they want to focus on. That's what Ancelotti's been brought in for. That's what Koeman has been retained to do. They will do everything they can to not speak about issues that are going on off the pitch in finances and the boardroom. And it's a solid start for both of them. Barcelona had a few scares against Sociedad. I think it was 3-2 going into the last 5 minutes or so. And Sergio Roberto got himself a goal to make sure they won. Martin Brathwaite, who's kind of been a bit forgotten in all this mess with Messi and Griezmann potentially leaving, and Brathwaite we saw in the Euros in the summer is fairly competent. He can get goals. He's obviously not Messi, but he's a fairly solid operator that if he gets a regular run in the side, he can be a good player. And as for Ancelotti, it's a situation with Real Madrid whereby there's not been a massive amount of movement. David Alaba's come in. He's essentially replaced Sergio Ramos in the team, but they've lost some huge players this summer in Ramos and Varane. And Zidane's main issue at going to the back end of last season, which Ancelotti is also fighting against, is he's battling against the clock. So many of their important players are over 30 or even over 32, Modric, Benzema, etc. So eventually they're trying to put off this major surgery that they need, but I don't really think Ancelotti will be hanging himself up on that too much. He's only got a 2-year contract. His brief will be to win a trophy this season and then cross those bridges when they come in the next year or so.
Des, Cristiano Ronaldo has been linked with a lot of clubs, and one of them was Real Madrid. And just in the last hour, in a very interesting move, Ancelotti tweeted and responded to the speculation that he might sign Ronaldo. He said, "Cristiano is a Real Madrid legend and he has all my love and my respect, but I never considered signing him." So is he going to stay? Is he going to go, Des?
I think he stays. I think Juventus, they're an interesting one at the moment. You look at terms of ins and outs. I think it's only Buffon, really, in terms of the established players, has gone, and that's the emotional move for him to go back to Parma. I think if Ronaldo looks around him, and people are saying, obviously, you're looking at his age and wondering, is there another move in him, or, you know, where does he finish up? I think if you look at, he's got the likes of Federico Chiesa, he's got Kulusevski, the Swedish international, he's got a lot of young, exciting players there, and Allegri is the manager as well. I think after what happened last year, they were dominant so long in Serie A, and for Inter to do what they did, and for even AC Milan, you know, they were never going to win that title the way they started. I think that's for them to get back and to be challenging to win Serie A again. Obviously, with Inter losing Lukaku, that's a plus in the Juventus column. I think also in terms of the Champions League, I don't think anyone will pick them to win it. Obviously, people will be talking about Paris Saint-Germain when things get underway properly in the group stages. But I think from Ronaldo's point of view, I think staying in Turin, there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. There's some exciting young players there, and I think a manager who knows how to win things.
Yeah, and a lot of those big clubs as well are pretty full and have targets that they're going to be spending quite a lot of money on. And Ruby, did you see there Ancelotti tweeting? I mean, everybody's doing it.
Fair play to Ancelotti, yeah. Well,
except you.
Yeah, except me, yeah. Why, well, I don't mind Ancelotti. What about Jose signing Tammy Abraham for $34 million this morning? Fergal, sorry.
Sorry, this is a little bit of a bolt from the blue, because he was linked with a couple of Premier League sides. Arsenal, Everton were both rumoured to be keeping an eye on him, and Jose swooped in. Maybe the old Chelsea connection has managed to help him get it over the line. It's an interesting move, because Abraham is one of them players that falls into that gap of, if he got a regular run in a Premier League side, he probably would be a good striker. Just looking at his numbers from 1920, 15 in 34 games in the Premier League. So I think he is a Premier League level striker. You know, there's very little that we can base that on, the fact that he's only had kind of season and a half of top flight football. But Lukaku coming back, they're not going to give up on Timo Werner. They've spent so much money on him, and the likes of Havertz and Pulisic and Ziyech, who all play in forward positions. There was no football for Abraham to play. We saw Giroud move on already this summer, and it's an interesting one to go to Roma. What exactly Mourinho will be able to do in Italy? Roma didn't finish the season particularly strongly, and they don't look like they're necessarily going to be in the title shake-up this time round. But I just think for the kind of intrigue that Jose brings to any appointment that he takes up, people will be keeping an eye on Roma. As for Abraham, I'd like to see him scoring goals again. He looks like a really good prospect and a good player, and you'd hate to have just seen him stay at Chelsea and rot away. And fair play to him for taking on this challenge. He could have stayed, he could have gone out on loan, he could have taken a little bit of a safer option. This is a real challenge for him. New country, new league, and let's see what he's made of.
Des, I don't know about your house, but in my house, the lads are constantly now watching videos of PSG training. So I am seeing Messi going around the club in the training ground. He is high-fiving Mbappe. He's hugging Neymar. He's making himself at home. He actually looks like he fits in fairness, pretty well. But what do you think is going to be the knock-on effect for Mbappe there?
I think firstly you need to lay down the law at home. I think you follow one team. You don't go off and follow Messi wherever he goes.
You know? We have one PSG fan who's been there for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, he's rebelled against Liverpool.
He's been there a long time. Okay. For Messi.
You can't blame him really, can you?
For Mbappe, well, you know, it looked like he was going to go at one point this year, but then it looks like now he's going to hang on, and then he'll go, he more or less decide, I suppose, where he wants to go, Real Madrid or Barcelona after that in a year's time. If you look at the absolute embarrassment of riches there now, and you look at how they're going to set up, I think a big thing for Mbappe, just to get back to the club as well, after what happened at the Euros and that penalty miss, I think just for him to be able to put that behind him, to get playing in a team that's winning games, you expect him to win most games that they have now. But there's, for Mbappe, I think it depends on his character. I thought it was very interesting. For years, there was no mention of his character, about there being anything suspect or anything like that about it. But it just seemed to be this year where it came around, and they were saying, you know, was he being a bit of a diva, a bit of a prima donna around the French squad as well? So now that he's in there, he's got Neymar and Messi. He's, you know, obviously going to have to share the limelight there and maybe fall down the pecking order by one spot anyway, at least. But it's a nice test for his character as well, just for him to show, you know, Messi might be in, but I'm still Mbappe. I'm still the one everyone's talking about around the world as one of the next big things, along with Haaland. So it's a nice test for his character as well to show what he can deliver in a team that's as stacked as that one.
And also, Fergal, it's a nice test for Poch. I know we might have mentioned it a few times as well, but when you throw in them and throw in Ramos as well, like, that's a difficult job.
It is indeed. It's a huge amount of balancing of egos, balancing of experience. You've got some of the biggest, most successful names in world football that you're trying to shoehorn into a squad and then into a starting 11. It's interesting what Des says about Mbappe, that we saw this summer. He's kind of maybe a little bit cut adrift within the French squad. And I think a lot of that has come on the back of PSG. That's been PSG's biggest problem before Pochettino, and something that he still has to battle against. This idea of it being a group of players rather than a team, rather than a unit, that's his biggest challenge. This team, in terms of the players that he can put out, should and probably will beat almost any team in European football. The big questions that we'll be starting to ask in the knockout stages of the Champions League in the new year will focus on this idea of a team. Can he get them into a functioning unit? Like, the names do just roll off the tongue: Messi, Neymar, Ramos, Mbappe, Di Maria, etc. But we've seen this so many times with really, really expensively assembled squads that they haven't necessarily got, you know, the kind of belly for the fight, the structure, the hard workers that supplement those players. Balancing that, getting all those boxes ticked is going to be difficult, because I think particularly within Ligue 1, they're going to be under pressure to win every single game and win it handsomely. Man City or Real Madrid, Barcelona, etc., Liverpool are not in that same box, where if they have a difficult game in their domestic league, it's not just an absolute assumption. Given the players that PSG have got, it's assumed that they will win every single game, and that the real test will come in the Champions League. So we've got to guard against that type of complacency and get results from them.
I think Wijnaldum's a really good signing in that regard, because I think, you know, there won't be as much focus on him, but as he's shown through the years, like, he is a team player. And if they're looking for someone in that area in midfield, where they have Verratti, and they've had a few others more, like, they brought in Idrissa Gueye, they brought in a few others who maybe didn't fit the way Pochettino wanted to play, but I think Wijnaldum certainly will. And in terms of being a team player, I think that's a huge signing for them.
As you said, guys, a test for them will come in Europe, but in the Bundesliga, not a whole pile happened there in the transfer news. But you have got Haaland versus Lewandowski tonight in the German Super Cup, with Dortmund playing Bayern, Fergal.
Yeah, both got off the target. At the weekend with a goal. Haaland, everyone's really excited to see if he just picks up where he left off and just keeps tearing these records to bits and scoring goals and being linked with moves away. Robert Lewandowski is just so consistent. You know, kind of, it's almost fitting that in the week where Gerd Müller's passed away, that, you know, the next two great strikers in Bundesliga football are still banging in goals. It does look in the early stages that it's probably going to be back to being a two-horse race. Dortmund, I think, slipped off last season and they found it difficult to battle themselves back into the Champions League spots. But with Hans-Dieter Flick leaving Bayern, and probably, he's not been confirmed yet, taking up the German national team job, Julian Nagelsmann's got himself into that pressurised position where, similar to PSG, as I mentioned before, he's expected to win not every game, but the massive majority of matches, whereas Dortmund's job will be a bit more to chase them down, to put up a challenge to them. And when you've got two guys at the top of these teams in Lewandowski and Haaland, you've always got a chance, even against the best teams.
Fergal, Piemont are in Champions League action tomorrow in the Netherlands against Spartak. What are their chances like?
It's a difficult one to call, because obviously Piemont have been in Europe before. This is the fourth campaign they've played in. I actually think the way that the new structure has come in terms of qualification does benefit them. So if they get through this round, there's one more to get through, and then they would qualify for the group stages. In terms of what they can expect, Spartak Subotica, who they're playing against, looking through their results, looking through last season, it looks like a relatively even match. You would imagine that if they can get a positive result away from home, that will be a big thing that they can look to build on to then take into the second leg. But I'm looking in the next round, the likelihood is it that will be FC Twente that they could come up against, and they're a regular in and around the group stages, maybe not necessarily threatening to go on and win it, but they've got a lot of experience to go into the group stages and push on in that competition. I would fancy Piedmont to get through, or in the next stage, which is likely, as I say, to be up against Twente, that will be a big challenge. But if they can get through that and into the group stages, then there's a massive amount of breathing space to go and express themselves and put themselves on the map.
And Piemont will have a stream of that as well. It is up on their social media. Des Curran, you were also in action tonight, action of a different kind, you're commentating.
Oh yes, the first leg of the playoff of the Champions League, which is, every time I hear about the playoffs for the Champions League, I don't know why, I keep going back to Everton, the one time they managed to break into the top four and they ended up drawing Villarreal that had Marcus Senna and all those players, and it was desperately unfortunate for them. But yeah, these games are interesting because there's so much riding on them and it comes early in the season. Shakhtar going really well, they're the away team in Monaco tonight for the live game on RTE2. They've had a good start to the season. They lost Tyson, who after 8 years there has gone back to Brazil. He's a big miss for them. Monaco, all these exciting young midfielders coming through, and the players like Ben Yedder and Fabregas and Kevin Volland around them as well. They, under Niko Kovac, had a huge step forward last year. They were in the title race in France up to, I think, the fourth last game of the season when they lost a fairly fiery affair against Lyon, and that cost them their chance. But they're definitely moving in the right direction under Niko Kovac, the ex-Bayern Munich manager, who had good success at Eintracht as well. Both teams will fancy it. At the same time, both teams, I think, will think they could have had a better draw than this. So it's an interesting one. Shakhtar are kind of a side that builds you up to let you down. We saw 2 seasons ago they got to the Europa League semi-final, and I was thinking maybe they'd give Inter Milan a good rattle, but they ended up losing 5-0. So you're never quite sure what to expect of them. More new young Brazilians coming in, which is their means of operation. They lose some players, they go back to Brazil, bring the youngsters in, give them a few years to develop and sell them on big. And Tete and Dodo are the two at the moment who've been there for a few seasons, but they seem like they might be the next two to go. It's a tricky one to call. First leg in Monaco, I think maybe over the two legs I'd fancy Shakhtar, but only just.
Well, there's the very best commentary, and Fergal, thanks for your time. We're going to take a quick break.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe, and Ruby Walsh. Now, I'd say that the dust has just about settled on that fantastic All-Ireland Under-20 final win by Offaly over Roscommon at the weekend. I'm delighted to say that Offaly Under-20 manager Declan Kelly joins us now on the line. Well, Declan, have things settled down?
They have. There's a few of the lads, in fairness, are back playing minor county semi-finals tonight. Last year's 2020, obviously, we got held up in Offaly for a few weeks towards the latter end of August, so there's a bit of a backlog of games we played. So for some of the lads back in the field tonight, and it's a lot of the clubs that have a lot of the lads back to season as well, because the club championships, the 2021 club championships, are starting then at the weekend as well. So they're back with a bang today, and I would say already a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be all systems go, I'd say. All right, the match is coming thick and fast. Were you surprised, Declan, by the amount of interest and attention that, I guess, the lead into the final and then obviously the final win garnered right around the country?
Yeah, I suppose, Marie, it was a unique final, I suppose, with the two teams that were in it. That was probably the first thing, and, you know, the way things worked out, obviously, with the Tyrone game and Kerry game being cancelled as well. There was massive interest in relation to getting tickets and going to the game then. Like, so that sort of probably looked after both counties in the sense that, you know, everyone was catered for. But I suppose around the country, yeah, you would have been getting the sense that there was a lot of interest in the game, because, and I would say it's down to the fact that it was probably a very unique with the teams that were in it, and, you know, you weren't looking at the, you know, your big teams, Dublin obviously, and the Kerry's now in the final. So it definitely garnered a good bit of interest in that regard, RH. Yep.
I think the football played as well, Declan, though, probably did add to it. Like, it was a really, really good game. Some absolutely fantastic scores. And I know that you are someone that does encourage the open, expansive, attacking kind of football, but you definitely delivered on that in the final.
Yeah, like, Marie, we were looking at the 20s. It's development. That's really what it was brought in for. And it's about trying, I suppose, get players through the system. And I suppose in the like of Offaly and Roscommon, like, we would treat the 20s and the minor as very, very important to get players through, like, to your senior squad. And, like, when you have them there, you're asking them, you know, you're really working hard, I suppose, and the skill level and, you know, I suppose the tackling and the commitment and work rate off the ball. That's really what you were sort of building your teams on. And in fairness to them, you know, they did and have all year, and even the previous number of years, like, they've been, that's really what, the way we've played. We haven't changed. There hasn't been anything different, you know. This year, like, we're with them 4 years, and I suppose the one thing we would have seen last year with the 20s, it was on pre-COVID, and it was on around February time, March, it was sort of over. But in my own opinion, it wasn't ideal, Marie, because it's meant to be developmental, but we were at that stage playing European Championship matches, and yeah, they had the lads playing schools and colleges games as well, and the weather wasn't ideal. So the way it worked out this year, it would have been like the first 2 years with under 20, it was summer football. So that definitely, I think, adds to the whole lads getting out there and being able to play a more open, expansive football as well, you know.
Declan, you say it's all about being developmental and encouraging these lads to play, and I read a line you had somewhere in the last couple of days where you're hoping these lads will serve an apprenticeship in the senior team. Do you think in 2021, with the way society is, that they'll be allowed to serve an apprenticeship, that they'll be given that time to find their feet?
I think they will, yeah. In fairness we have been very lucky over the last probably 3 years with John Mahon in relation to being over the senior squad. Like, John's very much, you know, he had a couple of the lads in there this year. Three of the lads were in on the senior panel, but like he was always very clear from day one, they're under 20 players, and that's where they need to cut their teeth. And so we're very, very lucky that way. And obviously, if they go into the senior setup, whatever's brought in next year, at the end of this year, set right into the senior setup, like, I do think the lads, they are grounded enough that they know, like, that they're not going to be able to go into a senior setup straight away and, you know, automatically get on the team. It is going to take time, and I suppose that's really what they need to do now. They do need to serve a couple of years there, you know, obviously the strength and conditioning and the things, and they'll be looking at obviously game plans. It does move up a level as well, like from where they are. So, but I've no doubt they will be given that space and time to you know, to progress, you know.
Yeah, because it's not easy to go to make that jump. And I'll always remember when Clare won the All-Ireland hurling in 97, the Miners won the All-Ireland as well, and they only managed to bring one player through from that team, and he wasn't even around for very long. So it's a really hard thing to do, to make that transition and to turn underage players into senior players. But if you look at where you've got them to now, and you do have some cracking footballers, really, when just from watching them over the last while, I won't go into naming them all, but just even the likes of Jack Brind, Colin Donoghue and Cormac Egan, who's known for his hair now as much as his football. Yeah. But they're just great footballers.
Yeah, there's been a lot of work that's happened over the last, probably working the back on the development squads and even in the clubs that has gone into, like, the faith for Fields, to be honest, has been massive in Offaly. Like, in the sense of, I suppose, from my own time and that, and we were involved in squads and that, you would never get to mix, say, with the senior squads or hurling and football. Whereas now you can go down, you know, on any night of the week that you're training down there, and there's bound to be maybe the Camogie or the ladies football, the senior hurling, there's bound to be some other squads down there, and they are in a very top-class environment in relation to facilities, like the Christy Todd's down there, and like, it's immaculate. Like, it'd be like O'Connor Park, the way the grounds are kept. The gym, there's a good big gym there, everything. But from our perspective, and from a manager's perspective, you are getting to speak then to the John Mottens, the Michael Fennellys and that, and that's a help too. And then be various times during the year then, or the seniors would bring in a few of our 20s and that for in-house games and that. Like, and That's all a positive for the players too, that they're sort of seeing a pathway there along the road. Like, you know, maybe next year I might get a call to win the panel. So definitely, there's a lot of stuff going on in the back on this board, really, that ended up cultivating last Sunday's victory, without a doubt.
Every time, well, not every time, but plenty of times during the aftermath of Sunday's game, the camera flicked into the crowd and you could see one very proud, famous golfing Offaly man stood in the middle of it. Yeah. And Shane Lowry's, I suppose, involvement with Offaly GAA has been well documented, but what exactly does he bring to the table for you?
The Lowry's, as a family, to be fair, are, you know, if there's any club games on in Offaly in the moment, you would go to O'Connor Park, whatever, and you'll see his father there and his uncles and the whole lot. Like, and in fairness to Shane, you know, he decided to contact Michael Leighton, and he wanted to push, I suppose, a bit of finance in around the whole area. And there's no doubt, I'd say, with COVID and that in the last year, it was probably a godsend to him. But like, just, I know he spoke to the minors there before the two minor finals and that, and he called into us on Sunday night, and in fairness, Ruby, the lads, like, they were just over the moon even just to see him. And he is, like, he's not a Shane, he didn't want to get up and say a word, but he did say a couple of small words, and in fairness to the lads, they were just to see him, I suppose, because he's a very down to earth, Ruby. He's very, very down to earth. Oh, like, there's no airs and graces. Yeah, he really is down to earth, and he knows he's a Clara man. He's father now with all head for Forban, but like, he'll never forget his roots, and that, I suppose, is the one thing about him, that he's just really, really a proud Offaly man. So he is, you know.
I remember doing a quiz once with him, and Desi Dolan was on the panel. I think he's father trained Westmead at some stage.
That's right, he did indeed.
Yeah, Shane used to be sitting in the front of the Westmead bus, and Desi Dolan was slagging about it. So GAA is in his core, but I just I hope it works out the way you're planning it, in that the lads will get time to develop and be allowed that time from the Offaly fans as much as the management. Everyone's in a hurry in 2021. I see it with young lads in racing, and I think that's a big effort for all of you to get these lads the time they need to develop.
Yeah, no, I suppose it is the key. Like, I think we need to be realistic too as to where we are. There's no doubt. Like, our remit from day one, we're 4 years there, has been to get players through the system, and that's probably at the end of the day is what we're judged on. There's no doubt winning the Leinster was massive for Offaly, because, you know, the lads, in fairness, we've been a long time rugby since we won a Leinster title in any grade, and that probably took an awful amount of pressure off the lads themselves, and then sort of knew at this stage, so we'll give this a rattle now for the next two games and see where it goes. But I think the public and Offaly need to be realistic. Like, we're not going to come down next year or the year after and say we're going to win all Ireland's lads and we're going to, you know, win Leinster's. Like, it does take time, and, you know, the players themselves, obviously, we spoke about it last week, regardless of the result, I know there is sort of bits and pieces going on in the background in relation to how the lads are going to handle things going forward as well, like, because, you know, they are young, and, you know, there's no doubt around home they're being lauded now. They said the whole place wants a bit of them, and in fairness to them, they are down to earth fellas, but like, they're going to get a lot of knocks in the next couple of years too, and probably the big thing is when they do get a call into a senior panel, that, you know, they may not be starting and only getting bits of games, and that's why they are just going to have to be prepared that it's for themselves to make the step up to senior to county. It is going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of hard work on their behalf as well. But I suppose the whole thing from our end of it is to have that support structure within the county for them, and that is being looked into at the moment as well, in fairness to them. Yep.
Well, there is an opening in Leinster. I mean, like, Dublin aren't what they were. Kildare didn't put up much of a fight in the Leinster final. Mightn't be difficult as you think now in Leinster, you know.
Don't mind him, he's a Kildare man now. He's trying to set you up for a fall.
No, in fairness, I would probably in Leinster over the last number of years, I would have always, at senior level, with a lot of the teams. Yeah, Dublin, there's no doubt, have been the standout team in Ireland.
They're gone now. Don't forget, they got beaten.
Yeah, they're beaten. Yeah. So, but in fairness, everyone else in Leinster, you know, at senior level, there has to mean much. I need the championship matches I've seen with Offaly in that league over the last. There's been very, very little between a lot of Leinster teams anyway, and even at twenties level too. We got over by a pint down in Wexford, and it was 2 pints against Westmead. Like, you know, they're fine margins now, really. You know, I've always said it. Leinster, if Dublin weren't in Leinster, you would have had a very, very competitive championship in Leinster at senior level for the last 10 or 15 years, you know. But hopefully, listen, teams in Leinster are beginning to, I suppose, push on, and I do think the gap is probably tightening up a little bit there, all right, yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody remembers the competitiveness of the Leinster Championship and those great days in Croke Park when they were full and there was really tight encounters being played out, and that would just be a great thing for football if we got back to those days again, regardless who was in the finals, just as long as it kept the public interest. But having Michael Deignan involved as well seems to have given a bit of a lift to the county, and not just the hurling but the football as well, and, you know, it's great to see him pictured with the young lads out in the pitch at full time as well, you know, right in the thick of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He you know, the Michael, he's probably 2 years ago, they have a lot of plans themselves, and you know, with the clubs and GPOs within clubs and that, like, I think they sort of took a lot of the Dublin model and the Wexford model in relation to how we're, you know, a lot of the games development courses going on. But unfortunately, obviously, you know, different with the COVID and that, things, the way things have worked out over the last probably 18 months, they haven't really got to probably really get into it really the way they would like to. But no, listen, he's full of energy. He's guys around him, Colin Cummins, Dervil Dolan, you know, they're there. We still have Christy Todd, like, Christy's, yeah, Salamis would awfully over back, you're going back to the 90s and that, like, Christy's on board there the last number of years in the faithful field. And like, there's good people there, and yeah, there's a, I suppose with Michael at the helm, there's energy there, there's big energy to try and push the thing on, both hurling and football across the board. Yeah,
Declan, well done at the weekend. I know the lads are all back training, but you can enjoy the rest of the week. Thanks for taking our call, and we're going to take a quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it's time to turn our attention to basketball. On Sunday, Ireland won the European Championship for Small Countries after a 97-66 victory over Malta. And we are now joined by one of the star players, CJ Fulton, and his dad, basketball legend, Adrian Fulton. Lads, you're very, very welcome. Just to you first, CJ, just to go out there and wear the green jersey and to win something for your country must have been very special.
Yeah, yeah. For sure, it was a great experience. You know, to win gold on home soil with a great bunch of lads, it was just an unbelievable week. You know, we were all excited going in. Our goal was to win from the beginning, but we all performed really well, and it was just a great week for us.
It must have been a great week for you as well, Adrian, just seeing your son go out there and, you know, with some very established players as well. There were some players like Jason Killeen there, who's been around, I'd say. He's not too probably far off your age as well. Just being out there and been able to hold his own and just impress on that international stage.
You were choosing your words carefully there, Marie.
Very carefully.
I'm sure he's having a laugh, you know. Well, certainly somewhere, but he's about halfway between myself and CJ, and I'm 50 next week, so
he's some man. I couldn't believe when I saw the pictures of him, and he's still going
and in great shape, to be fair to him, you know. Like he said, he was laughing the other day, he said, I feel like a dinosaur of the game, you know, because obviously the game has changed quite a bit in terms of its style. But I mean, his impact as captain and as a leader was immense over the short time we were together. And you know, he's had a terrific career, both domestically and obviously playing as a pro in Europe as well. So no, we were delighted to have him. And I mean, the lads were great with CJ. They were very welcoming and very supportive. You know, it's tough when you're starting your international career, throwing in at the deep end at 19. You know, so no, we're glad, obviously delighted for him, and glad that he did so well. And but the group of fellas that we were working with were absolutely tremendous.
Adrian, I was reading quotes from the coach, Mark Keenan, and I was most intrigued by the last line in one of them, where he says, "I think we've showed basketball Ireland we need to be at the next level." What is the next level?
Well, the next level is certainly trying to do what teams have done before, and that's compete. Trying to basically compete in the European pre-qualification tournaments and sort of World Cup qualification tournaments. It's probably you know, a bridge too far to expect an Irish team at the minute to qualify, but there's so much young talent, and the game has changed so much. It's really a golden generation, you know, that we're looking at right now, and we obviously hope that Basketball Ireland and Sport Ireland will support the game and try and get us back to playing the likes of Slovakia, who we were able to play about a month before the tournament, and Slovakia are already playing at the next level, trying to qualify for the last 16 of the European Championships in 2 years' time. And you know, we were within one shot of beating Slovakia, and they've already won two games in the last week, so we know that we're able to compete at that next level, and we obviously hope that we can go ahead and do that in the next couple of years.
Adrian, you're a synonymous name in Irish basketball, and you're calling this a golden generation. Do you think Basketball Ireland are doing all they can to get you to the next level?
Well, you know, at the minute, there was an announcement today for that the girls are going to go ahead next year, slightly offset. The girls are a year before us, and which is brilliant. So that's very encouraging. It's obviously been a tough time for lots of different sports. And, you know, if you're at the outside, if you're not involved in Gaelic games or football or rugby and you're in Ireland, sometimes you feel a little bit left out, you know, when it comes to funding. And we're hoping that we, by the success that we've had over the last week or so, that we can sort of get more notice, if you like. And, you know, we were disappointed that we didn't get any fans in the arena. That was certainly one of the downsides. So we felt that we could have done it safely. You know, it was a 2,500 seater arena, and we didn't have anybody in supporting us, which was frustrating. So I'm sure Basketball Ireland are doing what they can, and we'd certainly like Sport Ireland to row in behind them and support the game getting back, because not only do we need our elite players playing and our Super League players playing, we need our kids back playing as well. So we're hoping that we can get that going in the next month, 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, that's really, really important, Adrian. But just to you, CJ, hearing your dad there talking about a golden generation of Irish basketball, and he's certainly an authority on basketball in this country, but you are one of four players who are playing your basketball in the States in the NCAA Division One, which is pretty impressive, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys around my age who are out in America at the minute or going out this year playing NCAA basketball, so there's a lot of talent and depth, and there's a lot of guys back home as well here playing at the highest level here as well, so there's definitely a lot of talent coming through, so it's exciting times ahead.
CJ, you're in Lafayette University, I believe, and when are you going back there? When is your season kickoff?
This Sunday. I'm heading back this Sunday, yeah.
No rest for the wicked. And when the tournament starts, you go back this week, you're on a scholarship. Do you have to study as well, or are you on one of those real, you know, basketball, sporting kind of scholarships? No, I wouldn't mind being on myself.
If it suited you.
Yeah. They'll be studying as well, yeah, unfortunately.
Well, you have to say that because your dad is on the line. But yeah. Just on the kids, and you did mention them there briefly, and it does seem like it's really frustrating, Adrian, that we are... I can't even tell you right how long we're into the pandemic, but we're definitely well over 18,
months.
17. Okay, we're 17 months, Ruby says, into the pandemic.
You.
And the kids are not back in gyms yet playing basketball, even though they're in schools and, you know, they're going to be back in school again very, very shortly. It does seem that in the long term, this really long layoff is going to be damaging for basketball, and you could end up losing kids to the sport.
Oh, it's already happening. You know, I mean, I've seen certainly even families with kids, older boys or older girls who have played the game, and maybe their younger brother or sister has been playing, maybe getting into the game, maybe 9, 10, 11 years of age, and all of a sudden, you know, that's been taken away from them. So, of course, they're going to go elsewhere. They're going to go to sports that they get a chance to play. And like everybody else, I mean, we want a safe return to play. You know, we don't want to jump the gun at all, but when, you know, you see so many other events going on, it's the inconsistency that is very frustrating for us. And I mean, we certainly were training when we were allowed to train, and we were able to have kids playing, and you know, the protocols that Basketball Ireland have put in place are very strict, and people adhere to those, and we haven't had any issues. So that's where the questions arise, and we feel that, you know, if we're not one of the main players, even though globally basketball is a huge sport, you know, we feel that as in Ireland maybe we're not one of the main players, so we're kind of dismissed a little bit.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but you must be looking forward to the start of the National League. It's back on the 9th and 10th of October with pre-season games from the start of September. I guess it's a start, but you'd like to see a whole lot more, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's encouraging, and we've been looking forward to getting the word. Initially it was supposed to start in the mid September, and now it's obviously looking at the start of October. But again, I mean, I think even the chatter amongst basketball people today, when the news was announced, you know, a lot of people were frustrated that the kids weren't sort of put front and center of this, because they're the lifeblood of any sport. And as a PE teacher myself, you know, we want kids back playing whatever game it is. You know, and we just want them to have a range of opportunities and a range of choice. And right now, it's that choice has been very limited.
Adrian, we were talking to Declan Kelly a little bit earlier. He's the Offaly under 20 manager, and we were just talking about how difficult it is to bring kids from being almost underage teenage superstars to get them to that senior level. And I think we'll all probably remember as sports fans back to 2018 when CJ hit the headline scoring 47 points. You're on the phone now, CJ, so probably embarrassing. You have 15 three-pointers and St Malachy's won the All-Ireland glory, and he was just 15 years of age at that time. Just bringing kids along and trying to, I guess, develop them as athletes, it's something that you were definitely able to do with CJ.
I mean, we're very lucky with the setup that we have. Club-wise, underage, we have a lot of very, very dedicated people, you know, like every club and every sport throughout the country. A lot of volunteers, but a lot of people, you know, really put a lot of time in. And our own club, Belfast Star, along with St Malachy's, where I teach, I mean, it's a terrific school where there's a big emphasis put on extracurricular sport and music. And, you know, obviously you've got 1,100 boys in the school. You want to give them plenty to do outside the classroom as well. But, yeah, I mean, CJ has been fortunate. He's worked very hard. You know, a lot of great teammates, you know, a lot of very good coaches, you know, not just myself working with him. So there's a lot of people have contributed to him and his success. But he's dedicated, you know, and he works hard. So, you know, hopefully that he can enjoy his experience. I know he's looking forward to Lafayette. I know he's going to miss his mother's cooking, and he's going to miss his home comforts and the dog and all sorts of stuff and his sisters. But, yeah, I mean, he's looking forward to going away, and obviously we're excited for him.
CJ, you're only starting your basketball career, really, still only a teenager. What are your dreams for the future?
Going forward, I just love to have a good college career at Lafayette, you know. I've got 4 years there, and then just probably take it on from there. I mean, maybe like it would be a dream to go pro, play for a few years in Europe, or just
go on.
See what happens.
It's the dream, but the NBA, say it, go on, everyone thinks it.
No, I mean, yeah, that's every kid's dream, but realistically, you know, having a good college career and then going from there is probably what I'm aspiring to do.
That doesn't sound bad at all. CJ Fulton and Adrian Fulton, thank you so much for joining us, and we will all definitely enjoy following your career, CJ. Say, if you're half the player your dad was now, you won't be doing too bad at all. Thanks, guys, and congratulations on the success at the weekend.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So, Ruby, there is racing coming up in tomorrow?
Yes, Marie, in York. And, big meet in York. It's the Sky Bet Ebor Festival. It kicks off tomorrow, I think, around 10 to 2. And obviously the feature on tomorrow afternoon's card is the Judmont International Stakes. And I suppose, Marie, the relevance of the Judmont, what happens there usually gets played out in the Champions Stakes in Leopardstown at Ireland's Champions Weekend. I mean, you look back at last year, you had Gaiath beating Minding, and you had that massive rematch in Leopardstown a few weeks later. And you can go all the way back, Australia and the Great Gatsby, back to See the Stars. If you get a good Judmont, you tend to end up with a really good Champions Stakes, and Leopardstown's going to need a really good Champions Stakes because of the Tyrone COVID saga. The Ireland football final now moves on to September 11th, which is the same day as the Champions Stakes. And whatever way you look at it, Mayo v Kerry or Tyrone is going to swamp that. So it's unlucky for them. They went for that middle Sunday or that weekend in September to avoid the All-Irelands. But look, COVID gets involved in everything. But look, tomorrow you have Mishriff and Love. You don't have St Mark's Basilica. He's picked up an injury. And Love flies the flag for Ballydoyle. And to be fair to her, if she hadn't ran in the King George, coming here off the back of her Prince of Wales victory, she'd be pretty short. But she did get beaten in the King George by a Dayar, who of course won the Derby. Mishriff was second, he reopposes. But if she bounces back to her very best and she can beat Mishriff, at least she'll be coming back to Leopardstown to take on maybe Taranau with Dermot Wells, really good filly, and you might have some sort of a spectacle in Leopardstown.
When the All-Ireland final takes place, there's going to be 40,000 people in Croke Park. How many will be at the racing?
Right now, 1,000. I was laughing there at the last chat, the basketball. Adrian, I was going to tell him, just get the GAA negotiator to go to whoever it is that you're trying to get things to happen, because, I mean, they were giving out that the basketball were giving out that the elite are back, but the kids aren't. You go back 12 months, Marie, the GAA got the club back before the county. They are definitely kingpins at getting things done the way they want them.
Well, you know how this world works, Ruby. It's all about who you know.
Yeah, they seem to know everyone.
That is all we have time for, Ruby. Tara Stewart's up next.
Is she? Best of luck, Tara. I'm off for the week. Marie, you enjoy the rest of it.
Live across the nation, this is RTE